Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
A reading this morning is from Syrian-American poet Moja Khaf. It's called, "My Grandmother Washes Her Feet in the Sink of the Bathroom at Sears." My grandmother puts her feet in the sink of the bathroom at Sears to wash them in the ritual washing for prayer, wudu, because she has to pray in the store or miss the mandatory prayer time for Muslims. She does it with great poise, balancing herself with one plump matronly arm against the automated hot air hand dryer, after having removed her support knee highs and laid them aside, folded into thirds, and given me her purse and her packages to hold so she can accomplish this august ritual and get back to the ritual of shopping for housewares. Respectable Sears matrons shake their heads and frown as they notice what my grandmother is doing, an affront to American porcelain, a contamination of American standards by something foreign and unhygienic, requiring civic action and possible use of disinfectant spray. They fluster about and flutter their hands, and I can see a clash of civilizations brewing in the Sears bathroom. My grandmother, though she speaks no English, catches their meaning, and her look in the mirror says, "I have washed my feet over Isnik tile in Istanbul with water from the world's ancient irrigation systems. I have washed my feet in the bathhouses of Damascus over painted bowls imported from China among the best families of Aleppo. And if you Americans knew anything about civilization and cleanliness, you'd make wider wash bins anyway." My grandmother knows one culture, the right one, as do these matrons of the Middle West. For them, my grandmother might as well have been squatting in the mud over a rusty tin in vaguely tropical squalor. Mexican or Middle Eastern, it doesn't matter which, when she lifts her well-groomed foot and puts it over the edge. "You can't do that," one of the women protests, turning to me. "Tell her she can't do that." "We wash our feet 5 times a day, my grandmother declares hotly in Arabic. "My feet are cleaner than their sink." "Worried about their sink, are they? I should be worried about my feet." My grandmother nudges me. "Go on, tell them." Standing between the door and mirror, I can see at multiple angles my grandmother and the other shoppers, all of them decent and good-hearted women, diligent in cleanliness, grooming, and decorum. Even now, my grandmother, not to be rushed, is delicately drying her pumps with tissues from her purse. For my grandmother always wears well-turned pumps that match her purse. I think in case someone from one of the best families of Aleppo should run into her, here in front of the Kenmore display. I smile at the Midwestern women as if my grandmother has just said something lovely about them, and shrug at my grandmother as if they had just apologized through me. No one is fooled, but I hold the door open for everyone, and we all emerge onto the sales floor and lose ourselves in the great common ground of housewares on markdown. "Praise be to God," we sing, we just sang. "Praise be to that source of life that is beyond our understanding. Praise be to the love that knows no bounds and carries us through impossible situations. Praise be the movement of kindness among us against all odds. Praise be the ways new life arrives in spring, no matter how bleak the winter has been. Praise be to the grandmother who finds a way to pray in an inhospitable land. Praise be to what we find in common, and praise be to our vast differences. Praise be to God, however we understand them. Praise for so much feels a little fraught right now, as new horrors fill the news each morning, and we wonder how we, as a people, and each of us as a person, we'll meet the unwelcome changes and new, sometimes unfathomable challenges in our world. Oh, to be as persistent in both knowing the right thing to do and doing it as the grandmother washing her feet in the Sears bathroom. Knowing what she needs to do in preparation for prayer, wherever she is, whatever the cost. Grandmother unbothered by the judgment of onlookers or the embarrassment of her granddaughter, holding fast to her practice of faith because it tells her who she is, no matter what else might change. In our current landscape, where it's unclear what laws or protections or processes will hold, we are also asked to revisit what we know to be right. And to ask, what must we hold on to, even if everything else changes form? In the midst of this month of Ramadan, which is being observed in some of the most devastated parts of the world right now, you're probably aware that Muslims observe a fast from sunrise to sunset. And just as in Judaism and Christianity and yogic and Buddhist traditions, the intention with the fast is to call attention away from the worldly toward the ultimate. For Muslims in particular, it's to focus on the believer's need of spiritual practice, to allow the feeling of hunger to be a tool of connection to those around the world who do not have enough to eat, to invite paying extra attention to the need for honesty as a way to become more aware of the ways we're tempted away from truth-telling in our lives, to make extra efforts to offer charity and care for those in need in order to be reminded that we are, all of us, in need. A key facet of the Muslim faith that I think we in the Western world especially need to be reminded of is that its root means peace. And peace in a sense, not just of lack of warfare, but also in the sense that means submission, letting go. The greeting word salam, the word Muslim, the word Islam, all have their root in the Sim Lam Mim, what we would say is the S, L, and M, which means peace, submission. Islam, the religion of submission, Muslims, those who are peaceful, who submit. In the strictest sense, the faith of Islam is woven around something greater than the individual believer. Surrender to the will of God and allegiance to the power of community. And not a self-flagellating submission, not a woe to all you sinners submission, but a peaceful one. A sense that the best way to live a holy life is to let go. To know that it is not any human will alone that determines what will happen in our world. The friction point, though, comes in how we answer the question of what the will of God is, and as in every religion, how to distinguish that will from the will of people whose motives can be far from holy. So the month of Ramadan is the believer's opportunity to revisit their own motives, to align with what is most holy, to quiet the noisy chatter of other demands of the world so we can listen to that essence. When we let go of our attachment to knowing what will come next, admit that our known ways of doing things have long since stopped actually working for us, we sit with the question of what remains beyond what we think we know, beyond ego and accomplishment and external markers of virtue or success. Now, we in the Western world can hear about a month-long time of fasting, sunrise to sunset, this year in a time when the days are getting longer, and think, it's such a strange and mysterious faith. How harsh to go for a month without eating during the day. How terrible to be encouraging submission when we need people to take action. How difficult it is to imagine from within our faith a few, if any, disciples and disciplines, what it would be like to live in the midst of such strongly bound rules. There's a well-known Sufi tale that goes like this. A stream from its source in the far-off mountains, passing through every kind and description of countryside, at last reached the sands of the desert. Just as it had crossed every other barrier, the stream tried to cross this one, but it found that as fast as it ran into the sand, it disappeared. The stream was convinced, though, that its destiny was to cross this desert, and yet there was no way. Then a hidden voice, coming from the desert itself, whispered, "The wind crosses the desert, so can the stream." The stream said, "No, I've been dashing myself against the sand and only getting absorbed. The wind can fly. That's why it could cross the desert." The voice responded, "By hurtling in your own accustomed way, you cannot get across. You will either disappear or become a marsh. You must allow the wind to carry you over to your destination." "But how could this happen?" said the stream. The voice responded, "By allowing yourself to be absorbed in the wind." This idea was not acceptable to the stream. After all, it had never been absorbed before. It did not want to lose its individuality. And once having lost it, how was one to know it could ever be regained? "The wind," said the sand, "performs this function. It takes up water, carries it over the desert, and lets it fall again. Falling as rain, the water becomes a river." "How can I know this is true?" said the stream. The desert responded, "It is so, and if you do not believe it, you cannot become more than a quagmire. And even that could take many, many years, and certainly it's not the same as a stream. But can I not remain the same stream I am today?" "You cannot, in either case, remain so," the whisper said. "Your essential part is carried away and forms a stream again. You are called what you are even today because you do not know which part of you is the essential one." We are called at each moment to learn more deeply which parts of us are the essential one. Like the stream, as a nation right now, we're finding ourselves at a point where we're not sure the former ways we have dealt with challenges will work. How will we meet this moment? What will we learn about what is most essential? Like the stream, we are used to knowing how things will go, or at least telling ourselves we do. Predicting the outcomes of our actions and planning for some level of success, well, that's the American way, right? Spiritually, the idea of surrender shows up in almost every tradition, and especially among mystics, just like the story of the stream. Of all the efforts the stream makes to use the power that has worked for it before, none of them work when it meets the desert. The waters evaporate, can't penetrate the sand, and as long as the stream is striving, pushing to keep its own shape against the new obstacle, It's mistaking its external form for its essence. It's misunderstood the source of its power. And it is only in letting go of its own control, in trusting its neighbor, the wind, to carry it, that the stream can actually survive. Paradoxically, the practices of faith and culture that remind us to let go actually require a lot of discipline. Keeping schedules of prayer and fasting, of praise and forgiveness, staying true to the work of meditation, of contemplation, and of celebration, teach us the persistence that helps us shape ourselves around that essence, whatever that is in us that calls us to greater, deeper, richer life. It's not enough to do a practice once. It has to be practiced. We have to learn to make its rhythm our own in order to deepen our understanding of what is deepest, truest, most essential. I'm taking advantage this morning of the convergence of the cultural holiday of Nowruz, celebrated by Persians of many faiths, and the religious holiday of Ramadan, to make the point that the seasons and cycles of celebrations, of opportunities for reflection and prayer, and joyous noticing of what is moving within us and among us are what help us to survive in any culture, in any time, throughout human history. So the fast of Ramadan is not about retreating in quiet submission and being humbled and hungry in a corner. It's quite the opposite. It's time to ask what the prophetic voice inside us is saying right now. The heart of reality, some might name God, is calling us to more compassion, to more justice, to peace building in our lives. And that peacefulness we wish for and work for is inextricably bound to the peacefulness we wish for Israel and Gaza, Sudan, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, so many other places that might be in your heart that I didn't name. Submission is letting our hearts break at the thought of a holy month of fasting in a place where there's already war-induced famine. It's feeling the vulnerability of all those subject to violence around the world, fighting in wars they did not choose, perhaps on behalf of people they did not know, perhaps because of identities that are born in them and sacred and holy. This submission is a prayer for peace that comes of each human being realizing a potential and a meaning in who they are, a worth that is measured in being fed in body and spirit in community. If we collectively are the stream, we need repeated lessons in what to let go of in order to learn what is the deepest part of our essence, what will carry us across the desert places and times of this world into a new expression of the holy. You and I might not be observing the fast right now, but I wonder if we can all find moments in prayer, in contemplation, in meditation, in movement, or in stillness this week to let go, to open ourselves to our own not knowing, to offer ourselves in trust to the force of compassion and truth and beauty in the universe, to come to know ourselves beyond external accomplishments or failures, beyond our material surroundings, to connect with the eternal rhythm of life itself, that we might learn and practice ways of true peace, that we might imagine ourselves on the other side of the desert, regaining form and new life. In this time when we're called to discernment of what to hold on to and what to let go, may we follow the seasons and cycles of faith, time-honored traditions, and hold on to one another as we journey forward together. Amen. Go forth to imagine those meadows so vast, those mountains so high, to let the grove of light in your heart run you to the edge of the meadow, to the top of the mountain, where you can hear a voice calling your name, celebrating your essence. May love hold us until we meet again. Let us keep this faith and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Amen.
2, 3, 4.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.